Campus 103.7 presents a collaboration between me, Patricia Salomone, and my friend Stephen Mangione for the reviewing of the book The Path to Redemption, A Journey to the End of the Earth by Stephen Mangione. This is another review in the series A Book, A Thousand Stories. Last week, with James and Maria, we visited the Grand Cathedral of Santa Maria in the city of Burgos. The author calls Burgos a marvelous city and writes with amazement about this grand cathedral whose aura of serenity and grandeur brought tears to Maria's eyes.
The atmosphere that is created in these cathedrals by instruments and voices varies so much, from the small country chapel where a simple pilgrim's mass is being held with the congregation themselves singing, to a church in a town where a full-blown choir may be singing during the mass, and finally to the majestic Misa de Peregrinos or pilgrim's mass in Santiago Cathedral, with the organ and a full choir singing while the Bota Fumero swings through the transept of the church. More about this later. The feelings vary between these, quiet and introspective in the first case, exuberant in the second, and ecstatic in the third. All are very emotional experiences.
So emotional, in fact, that the organ music had a magical effect on James and Maria. In fact, our episode last week ended with our author concluding his chapter 20 by telling us that it was clear that there was mutual desire between the two. They had decided to spend the night in a hotel, and when, after the concert in the Grand Cathedral, they returned to their respective rooms, Maria gave James a quick kiss on the lips, sending him off to bed with the words, "We've had a great day together, and we will have another one tomorrow, and the day after, and the day after that too, God willing. So, there is time." This statement held a promise of much to come between our two peregrinos. We will continue following the two as they proceed through the Camino and their mutual attraction grows. As Burgos is the birthplace of El Cid, join us in your imagination to listen to Stephen recount the legend of El Cid, the city of Burgos's most famous hero. Thank you.
Rodrigo Díaz de Vivar, known as El Cid, which means the Lord from the Arabic seed, was born near Burgos. He dominated a large part of the Iberian Peninsula at the end of the 11th century. He even went as far as to reclaim part of the area around Valencia from the Moors, although after his death, it was reconquered by them. He became Spain's national hero and the protagonist of the most significant medieval epic poem, El Cantar de mi Cid, which presents him as an ideal knight. This was an anonymous epic poem written in the 12th century that tells the deeds of an older El Cid. It is based on the theme of the conquest of Valencia after he was banished from Castile by King Alfonso, who believed a number of false rumors spread by noblemen who were jealous of him, falsely accusing him of stealing part of the taxes paid to the crown of Castile.
Next morning, the bells of the Cathedral of Burgos will be the wake-up call for both James and Maria, who both arise with thoughts of one another. Both think how pleasant time together is, and to both of them, last night had been a dream. First there had been their tour of the cathedral, setting a mood of otherworldliness, then the choir concert, which transported them again. Finally, their quiet, intimate dinner in the restaurant had felt as though they were the only two people in the world, dining alone in their little corner. When they had walked back to the hotel and stood in front of Maria's room, James recalled having an almost unbearable urge to make love to her. But she was clearly not yet ready to go beyond a certain point. Yet, as we know, there is always the other side of the story. James tries not to dwell on his guilt feelings, but the sad memory of the fatal accident keeps coming to the surface to torment him. He wonders whether the police back in Malta had discovered anything. But most of all, in all honesty, he was still not feeling that he was atoning for his crime to any significant degree. Maria felt a very strong physical attraction, way beyond anything she had felt for any of her recent boyfriends. Then, a conflicting thought arose. She hardly knew James. Both taken up with their thoughts, they sat silently at a breakfast together, enjoying the sun's warmth, the peace of the morning, and observing that across the road a crowd was gathering on the cathedral steps for the celebration of a wedding. It was time to resume their walk, an uphill climb to reach the Meseta, a high plateau that stretched almost 200 kilometers all the way to the city of León.
The meseta is generally very flat, although there are occasionally hills which stand up above the plain, such as at Castro Heris. With the land being so flat, the sky appears enormous, and the horizon appears to be at an immense distance. It is a very agricultural area, with vast areas of cereals and rapeseed, with their contrasting greens and yellows, interspersed with clusters of dark green trees. The villages are generally small and quite far apart. Some sections of the Camino seem to be interminable straits which go on forever, like one 19-kilometer stretch between two villages, Carrion de los Condes and Terradillos, where there is not a single village, building, or even tree to offer shade to the walker. But nevertheless, there is something sublime about the meseta. The mornings can be very cold indeed, at a few degrees above zero, but noonday temperatures could then rise to 30 or more degrees. This is why pilgrims tend to dress in layers, so that as the day gets progressively warmer, they can shed their jacket and fleece until they are left with just a shirt and trousers.
Walked along this plateau, the author's description of the scenery is idyllic. The sky seemed larger than life. They were able to see in every direction, over unending fields of wheat, punctuated by a few trees and a high range of mountains appearing dimly to the west. James reckoned that they must be the Montes de León, and he was surprised that he could see them already from such a distance. It was truly a sublime sight. Their destination that day was the village of Fontanas. On arriving, they sat on a bench, and Maria, whose feet were hurting, removed her boots and socks. Nasty-looking blisters had developed beneath her toes, a very common ailment for peregrinos on this long Camino. James helped relieve the pain by lifting her foot onto his lap, pricking the blisters and applying medication. Painful though it was, Maria felt a little better and managed to limp the few hundred meters to the albergue. After checking in, they sat on the terrace overlooking the village square, James updating his diary and Maria thinking of her friend Sylvia. She wondered what had happened to her, as she did not seem to have caught up with her on the way. Later, after watching the glorious sunset, they went inside for dinner and seated in the refectory. They got chatting with two Brazilian ladies in Europe for the first time in their lives. Of course, the subject of conversation turned to the famous Carnival of Rio. Maria enjoyed listening to Letizia and Rosana recounting about this yearly event in their fascinating Brazilian accent. As for us, we have here the opportunity of listening to my friend Teresa Andarte, who hails from Brazil, as she tells us about the Brazilian carnival in her fascinating Brazilian accent.
Ah, por que estou tão sozinho? Ah, por que tudo é tão triste? Ah, beleza que existe. Ah, beleza que não é só minha, que também passa sozinha.
Carnival festivities in Brazil probably go back to the Middle Ages, but some elements were inherited from ancient celebrations of different people, especially the Mesopotamians, Greek and Romans. Entrudo, a Portuguese festival, is said to have influenced the Rio's carnival. His first carnival ball was held in 1840, with participants dancing polka and waltz. Samba was introduced in 1917, 77 years late. The city of Rio de Janeiro is known all the world for its carnival celebrations, an important festivity for the cultural identity of the city, deeply rooted in its history and social life. For us Brazilians, carnival is a kind of institution. It's an opportunity for the people to forget about the political and social ills, and to distract themselves, finding joy in the lyrics of songs that criticize covertly the existing historical corruption. It's a veritable part of opportunities and attract many investments, as highlighted by the National Confederation of Trading Goods, Services and Tourism, CNC, the projection of financial transactions for Carnival in 2022 was 6.45 billion Brazilian reals. Carnival is an engine for economic development, as it's a source of income for thousands of families in Rio and generates employment not only during the days of revelry, but also throughout the year. Tourists come from all over the world in search of a good excuse for a holiday, forgetting about problems, free from the stress of work and the responsibilities of our daily lives. The main characteristics of Carnival stand out. It usually involves a public party and or parade, combining some circus elements, masks and a public street party. People wear costumes to lose their everyday individuality and experience a sense of social unity. There is no carnival without masks, kimono, tambourines, sambista, confetti and streamers, pierrot, harlequin and columbine. The parade of samba schools is present in Rio de Janeiro and São Paulo. Samba schools emerged from the influence of real carnival practices, especially the carnival ranches. The first parade of official samba schools took place in 1932, with Mangueira emerging as the champion. In Rio de Janeiro, the Carnival Parade takes place annually at the Sambódromo da Marquês de Sapucaí. A certain number of associations compete for the title of champion of the Carnival, with evaluations made by judges, based on different requirements previously stipulated by the organizers. The schools have their components divided into groups or wings. All are richly dressed and all are dancing, and all components sing the samba plot in unison, led by the school's official singer, the handle. All over Brazil, socio-environmental carnival manifestations are spreading, generating a positive impact on revelers and showing that it's possible to have fun and save the planet at the same time. If, for most adults, carnival represents moments of relaxation and joy, for children it's creativity, playfulness, happiness and culture.
She doesn't see.
four pilgrims started their walk together that morning, the two Brazilian ladies singing to them in Brazilian Portuguese and quoting some songs by famous Brazilian musicians, which Maria said she loved, like João and Astrud Gilberto, Antonio Carlos Jobim, and others. But by the time they reached the village of San Antón, Rosana and Letizia stopped to visit the health center, as both were struggling to walk on their sore feet. Maria and James offered to stop and wait for them, but the two Brazilian ladies insisted that they continue their walk in the hope that they might eventually catch up with them. On parting, Maria augured that one day she and James could visit them for the some days during the Rio Carnival. Whoops, and this was the first time Maria realized that she had linked herself with James so closely. Would James have realized, she wondered. Resuming their walk, our two pilgrims proceeded until tired they reached Fromista in the early evening. Maria's blisters were again giving her trouble. Yet, after a refreshing shower, she felt better, and they strolled to the nearby 11th century church of St. Martin. Breathtaking and pure in its simplicity, one of the finest Romanesque churches in Spain. As they walked out of the church, James took Maria's hand. Both agreed that rather than settling for the crowded eating places on the plaza, they would find a quiet little restaurant where they could enjoy each other's company, as they had done in Burgos. The choice fell on a place called Los Palmeros, which had a warm atmosphere with a timber ceiling, papered walls, carpeted floors, and a cozy fireplace. Here, in this romantic old-fashioned tavern, over a glass of Ribera del Duero, they finally declared their feelings for one another. James took her hand in his and said, "Maria, meeting you has been wonderful. You are the sort of person I have always dreamed about, but have never met until now." Maria replied that she felt the same way, and notwithstanding some hesitancy, she decided to follow her instinct and allow her feelings for James to develop. James declared that he had a specific reason for facing the Camino, but never would he have expected the pilgrimage to take this turn. "The chance," he said, "for me to meet the person who may be the love of my life." Maria shared that feeling, but they both kept their guilty secrets from one another, perhaps because they wished their relationship to grow deeper before revealing them. The author now tells us that for our couple, the next few days were like a dream. As their relationship was developing, they only had eyes for each other, and they seriously started to consider the prospect of a lifelong commitment. James and Maria will continue walking along the vast meseta for some days, and there we will find them next week as we continue reading through the story In Search, through the developing love story of human forgiveness and redemption. Stefan and I thank our Brazilian friend Teresa for her kind contribution on the Carnival in Rio, which has enriched this episode of the review of the book The Path to Redemption by Stefan Manjón. Remember that this episode is repeated on Campus 103.7 on Thursday at 15 hours, while the next episode goes on air, same station, next Monday at 18:30. Till then, Steve and Teresa and I thank our listeners and say goodbye.